Coming up on This Week in Google, Eric Schmidt predicts the next 5 years on the web. We take a look at a Google Maps mystery, and Gina Trapani makes a big announcement. Twig is next.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for This Week in Google is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com. This is Twig, This Week in Google, episode 14 for October 31st, 2009. Nutgraphs, gadgets, and bots.
This Week in Google is brought to you by GoToMeeting. Business travel can kill your company's profits, so do more, save more, and travel less with GoToMeeting for your free 30-day trial. Visit GoToMeeting.com/twig. And by listeners like you. Thanks so much for your contribution. We couldn't do Twit without it.
It's time for This Week in Google, the show that covers all things googly and cloudy. As a matter of fact, joining us on this Halloween episode, appropriately attired, Gina Trapani in lab coat, protective eyewear, and she's even got a wave pocket protector.
Ooh.
Look at that. That's very geeky. Now, Gina, this is for the show. You're not going to go out trick-or-treating in this.
No, I'm probably going to stay home and tail my server logs. I'll be honest.
Oh, well, let me ask you, do you like tail 100 or do you go for a little bit more?
I do a tail that dash F and you know, just watch it go.
Do the whole thing, huh?
Yeah. Just, you know.
Wow, you're
and
a wild
then kind
of
watch it, you know, fly by. It makes me feel happy. That's my treat for Halloween.
Jeff is completely underwhelmed by this conversation. Jeff Jarvis is also here from BuzzMachine.com, our resident journalist and expert on the new media. And of course,
that's my Halloween costume, playing that like an expert.
An expert. And also the author of What Would Google Do, which is in its 1,073rd printing right now.
We wish.
Lost track. Did you guys see the... I just thought this was wonderful. The Google story video that was on YouTube.
Yeah.
Wasn't that nicely done? What's the story? Is that an ad? What are they doing there?
I think it was some like agency that did it. I don't know who did it, but it started spreading around. It's pretty good.
Oh,
I didn't see it. What is it?
It looks like it's 3D graphics, you know, character graphics of the history of Google. So it starts with a book and you turn the pages. And it's nothing that you don't already know. It's just the history of Google. But it's so beautifully done. I thought, well, why would somebody put so much effort into this unless, I don't know, it's an ad or something?
Yeah, that looks really nice, actually. So, you know, they've been doing a little more, like they did their first TV commercial, right? Didn't you mention this last week? They haven't done commercials typically.
Exactly. For enterprise.
Oh, right, for Going Google, the Going Google campaign went to TV.
There have been billboards. I saw billboards in the Silicon Valley a few months ago. So, but yeah, their first TV ads, they bought some time on one of our podcasts for, and I thought this was the first time I'd ever heard an ad from Google, and that was for the Google Summer of Code last summer.
Really?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So they're getting a little, you know, you wouldn't think Google would need to advertise.
Yeah, that's always been their thing, right? That they don't really need to advertise. And so you don't see, you know, you wouldn't see commercials for them, or you wouldn't see the kind of big, you know, like Yahoo has those big, huge billboards all through New York. This is interesting. This definitely looks like something you'd see on TV, although it's kind of long.
It's long. It's too long for a regular TV ad, but it's just really slickly done. I don't know. It might just, you know, it could easily be just a spec ad. Somebody just did. Well, we'll just show how good we are.
Yeah.
As long as you're on the internet, kids, go to Google. If you're listening to this show on Halloween, anyway, go to google.com and you'll notice something a little special. The E in the Google has a nice little piece of candy.
Oh.
But wait.
The rest is ghostly.
But wait, right? There's more. Click it. And the candy multiplies.
Oh.
But wait, there's more. Click it again. It's a surfeit of candy. More candy than you could possibly eat.
But it's all wrappers. Isn't that cute?
Yeah, and then you click it again and it's
all gone.
All
And then you make an appointment with your dentist.
Yeah. They should have. Now, what are the search results? Maybe they are. That would be funny if it were dentist. No, it's Halloween.
It would be funny if it was dentist listings, local dentist listings.
You might want to check in with your dentist. They have a great sense of humor, I have to say. And now, is Marissa Meyer in charge of these little...
Isn't she in charge of everything?
Yeah, I think so. She's in charge of the user interface, so the page. So I'd imagine that this is under her jurisdiction.
Yeah.
Since I'm in New York, the only it then goes to Halloween 2009 search, and my only ad is from an Afghan restaurant that has free pumpkin turnovers with your order of two main entrees.
It doesn't always work.
No.
I'm being told in our chat room that there are, in Hulu, there's ads for Google Chrome. I think that is another thing that Google's been advertising is Chrome. Switch to Chrome.
Yeah, yeah.
I bet you they see those, though, more as public, public good ads as opposed to commercials, because I think that they're really trying to foster a move towards HTML5, and Chrome is just their, what do they call
this? Trojan horse.
Yeah, stalking, what do they call it? Stalking dog, stalking pony. Stalking what? Yeah.
Horse.
Stalking horse.
Yes.
I'm sorry, I'm not really good on my metaphors from the steps. Google Voice is offering invites now. I got a 3 on my Google Voice account.
Oh, good luck. Mm-hmm. And you can use Google Voice with your regular phone number now.
That's, you mean like number portability?
And some of the features. I just saw it. I saw it moments before showtime. It's on the friend feed, but if you give up a few bits of functionality, but you can use Google Voicemail and such with your regular mobile number.
Yeah, you don't get the full features of a regular Google Voice account, but you basically give it your phone number, and then what it does is you program your cell phone to forward calls, incoming calls, to Google Voicemail. So it's basically Google Voicemail. It's not quite a full Google Voice account.
Got it.
And so what you get is you get Google Voicemail, which means that the voicemail gets stored in Google Voice. They transcribe it. They can it emails it to you or SMSs it to you, which is really handy. And I'm actually really excited. I set up my cell phone to do it. Your cell phone has to support, or your service has to support forwarding. You have to be able to forward calls that so it basically takes the voicemail away from your carrier entirely and forwards it to Google.
You know, I have an iPhone, so of course I don't want to do that because the visual voicemail on the iPhone is so good. But
yeah,
if you have a Google phone, that might be something you'd want. Does the G1 treat Google Voice differently than other phones?
I have the Google Voice app installed, the official app installed on Android. So when I get voicemail, or SMS messages, I get notifications, on the phone, just like I would, anything else. And I can preview, I can see, it's just like visual voicemail. I can see who sent it as well. I can get the transcript just by browsing my list of voicemail and SMS all in one interface. So not only do I see who called and have to tap it to listen to the voicemail, I can, I can glance at a preview of the transcript, which is for me, it's awesome because I hate listening to voicemail.
Yeah. No, I like the transcripts, although actually, you may like it for this reason. It's kind of a puzzle to figure out what they're actually saying.
It is.
Only about one word in three is actually correct.
Yeah, it's like when your Armenian cousin stays and takes messages for you, right?
Yeah. Yeah. But it's fun. It's, I don't, my, maybe, I bet you, Gina, because you're kind of like me, I bet you like solving puzzles. I actually enjoy the challenge of what the hell is this supposed to be?
Yeah, in the Google Voice app, you can, when you play the message back, it shows you the transcript
and it highlights
the words as the person speaks. You can actually see, you can watch it, to see how good their transcription is, which I enjoy because it's just kind of fun to see they thought that word was that word. It's kind of like karaoke or something, the lyrics.
Yeah,
it's the bottom of the screen.
It's a feature.
Yeah. How good is the Google Voice transcription? Not very.
Right. It's not.
But. Fun to play along. It usually is enough for you to get the gist.
It is. You get the gist for sure.
On the iPhone, does it do this on Android? On the iPhone, it highlights the number, so at least you can call that number back.
Yeah, you can easily return a call.
It makes it very easy. Just press the button and it returns it. So there are finally some new Android phones out, and there's some real excitement around the first from Verizon, the Droid, which is the Motorola Shoals. Did you get a look at it at all, Gina?
I didn't get a chance to look at it. I read lots of the reviews, and I've been holed up this week finishing off a project, so I didn't get a chance to get out there. Did you get your hands on one? You were going to get one right away.
I was going to get one right away, and I know some reviewers got one, but I'm not on that magic list.
O'Malley was not impressed.
Really? What did he say?
He said, if you're waiting for the iPhone killer, this isn't it. I had this vision that actually there's a whole bunch of people out there who are waiting for the Messiah.
Yeah, it's kind of like that. Or Godot, one or the other.
And then when I tweeted that from home, a few people said, no, the iPhone killer will come from Apple.
Ohm made a good point. Does it have to be this kind of binary thing where it's either the iPhone or the iPhone killer? I mean, isn't there room for something else?
When you're stuck with the phone for 2 years, that's the problem. You want to buy the best there is. Yeah.
That's a good point. That is a good point. And in fact, that's part of the reason why I haven't run out to the store. I have to finish out my contract. And, if I walk into the store, I'm going to sign up for another freaking contract and have two wireless bills. And I use my Google Voice number anyways. So it's going to, it's just like, I don't even want to tempt myself. And I try to go with the late early adopter crowd. Like, I never want to be like the canary in the coal mine. I always like to wait for version kind of two. So I feel like I want version two of Droid. So I don't know if that's going to be, hopefully it's going to be spring of next year.
Junior, would you pay the non-subsidized rate for it to get a Droid if you could get it without contract?
So what is it? It's $600?
Boy.
Yeah, it's a lot. I mean, I paid for my G1, I got a little bit of a discount. I worked a little bit of a deal with a friend, but I paid a lot more than the subsidized price because I wanted to switch over. But no, I probably wouldn't do that again because the G1 sucks.
But of course, telling me that it would only work on Verizon anyway. It's not GSM, so.
Right.
Right. Well,
that's another problem. It's not a world phone, is it? Yeah.
Right. Yeah. And I'm going to London in a couple of weeks, and that'll be a problem.
There's an HTC handset that'll be out soon, too, the Aris, which is another Android phone from Verizon. That HTC typically makes kind of multi-band phones, so maybe it will work. That's the problem with Verizon in general.
It's a confusing array of phones now. I think last week TechCrunch had the post with all the phones in it, and it's quite a shopping spree.
It's interesting how long it's taken the phone industry to respond to the iPhone. It took them a couple of years. The first few attempts, like the Sprint Instinct and the BlackBerry Storm, were such flops. I mean, they looked like an iPhone. That was the only thing they had going for them. And I think that it's probably going to be an Android phone. Although I did order a Nokia N900, which is not running.
I saw you say that. Yeah. Why?
It looks, it's a very powerful piece of hardware. It's really a tablet PC with phone capability.
It's a big little sucker.
It's not as big as it looks. It's thicker because it has a slide-out keyboard. That's one of the things about the Droid that's kind of interesting. It's not much thicker than an iPhone, but it has a slide-out keyboard. So it's a very thin phone. This 900 is thicker, but it's running MIMO, which is Nokia's version of Linux, just as Android is Google's version of Linux. It does support all Linux applications, with some modifications. I presume that's kind of like Android in that respect. It has touch, has a lot of nice features. And I bought it because of, I mentioned last week, this new T-Mobile, all-you-can-eat plan that doesn't require a contract. I like that idea. So you're paying an unsubsidized price. You're paying $600 for the N900, but you don't have to commit to it.
Yeah, that's nice. So when you say it runs Linux apps,
I'm told it runs Linux apps pretty much unmodified.
Oh, huh.
Yeah,
you
know,
Is it locked to T-Mobile?
It's completely unlocked. It's completely unlocked. It's not from T-Mobile. I just bought an unlocked U.S. version that runs well on the T-Mobile network.
That's right, because nobody sells those Nokia phones here.
Right.
Right.
T-Mobile might. I mean, it looks like it was designed for T-Mobile. It's on the 1700 megahertz frequency, which is T-Mobile's 3G network. So it's almost like it was meant for T-Mobile. But Nokia's smart that way. I don't know. I think this is going to be my dark horse. And with another horse analogy, Leo's, ladies and gentlemen. This is going to be my dark horse candidate as opposed to the Droid. That's why I wanted Gina to buy a Droid. So I didn't have to.
I'm gonna check it out.
All right. We'll do a head-to-head.
We will.
Now, one thing that is important for any of these phones to succeed is some sort of application store. What's the Eclair Android app store look like? Is it improved?
I haven't checked out. I'm not running Eclair right now, which is Android 2.0, and I'm not sure that at the app store that the market is. I'm not sure exactly what the improvements are to the apps to the Android market. I mean, listen, the big problem with the Android market is that they're just you know, there just isn't the selection of apps and high quality apps that there is in the App Store, right? So hopefully if the Droid gets more popular, you know, the more popular platform, more people are going to develop for it. So that's really what's, you know, what's important. The market is still, I have a little trouble with it. I wish that it notified me of updates on my phone a little better. But it has improved since just in Donut. So hopefully in Eclair we'll see even more updates. But more really what we need is more applications. That's what's going to make the market better.
That's right, Cupcake. So they're asking in the chat room, is Gina in costume or did you just forget to change before she came?
The glasses are just freaking me
this
out.
This is here. How Gina dresses. Freaking. Yeah, sure. She wears protective eyewear and lab coats. Yeah.
And lab coats.
As she hangs around the house.
Perhaps I should take off the protective
eyewear. No, I like them. Let Jeff be freaked out. It's okay. It's okay. He can handle it. So the reason I ask about a store is because we got news this week that there's going to be a Google Wave app store.
Yes.
That's an interesting, very interesting idea.
Very interesting, yes.
So what's the point there?
Well, Google's saying that they want developers to develop for Wave and they want to set up some sort of revenue sharing. Developers have been asking about it ever since Wave launched. Yeah, I mean, I think the App Store just, you know, the iTunes App Store just created all these opportunities for developers to make money for, small amounts of money for each app sale. And they want the same thing from Google. And so this is going to be great. I mean, it's going to be a big incentive for Google, for developers to develop for Wave.
It is a way to make money for developers. It's not merely a way to find plugins.
It is a way to make money. Hmm. Lars said that they are looking into doing revenue sharing, figuring out a system for revenue sharing. So yes, you should, you know, be able to purchase apps from, you know, from the purchase extensions. I'm not sure. So Wave extensions are gadgets and bots. So it's going to be, we're going to have to figure out how that, you know, it all works. It might be a while out, but yes, you are going to be able to buy Wave extensions as well as just find them.
I think that's pretty important for the ecosystem.
Yeah, I do too, for sure.
I'm trying to figure out how that works. So who would be the most likely to buy them? If you're running a Wave server and you're running services, enterprise or whatever, that's where you're going to buy them?
Yeah, you know, it's a really good question. It's like, is it the server administrator who wants to be able to install them for all of the server's users, or is it going to be the end user who says, I want to use, you know, the Ribbit gadget, so I'm going to spend $2 and then I'm going to be able to use it with the people who I Wave with.
But then do the other people who you Wave with have to buy the same thing?
Well, yeah, I mean, that's the issue.
It's got to be on both ends.
Or not.
Yeah. I mean, well, that's the way gadgets work is when you add a gadget to a Wave, everybody who's on the Wave can see that gadget. Bots are another kind of extension that you have access to and you can add to the Wave. So, I mean, they could restrict bots to just, you know, use by the people who paid. I don't know how they would do that with gadgets. It seems like they should be able to do some sort of server administrator can buy a license for so many users for a certain extension, but the servers are federated, so people are going to have access to them. So it'll be really interesting to see like how this is going to play out.
It becomes interesting too if somebody can kind of generously buy I create the better Wave for my group for some reason, and I become more popular because I did that.
Yeah, interesting. Yeah, because if it's a map gadget, then everybody can see it, right?
Right.
So right. You could make a beautiful Wave that you created by using gadgets that you purchased that not everybody has to own.
I see. Yeah, I see. But everyone who participates on the Wave, in theory, should be able to use that gadget. But you give them access. You know, so if I create a Wave with my gadget and I add you to it, Leo, you can look at and use and manipulate the gadget in whatever way.
Oh, so that makes sense then. If it's not a double-ended thing, then it makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
Right.
You're right, Jeff. You hit the nail on the head. There's this kind of competition to make the best.
I've got the cool Wave.
Yeah.
Oh, I've got the cool Wave with a really cool gadget. Yeah. I see what you mean. Yep.
Right.
Yep.
And so it becomes interesting then to see that if Wave does become a media thing, as I keep predicting to no end.
I keep waiting for.
Then the cool publisher is going to want to have the coolest Wave.
Yeah. I mean, I kind of think about Wave extensions like WordPress plugins, you know, that, you know, you can add to your installation and make them do stuff on your site. So yeah, it could work that way. Although this is totally all speculation. Like the word that there would be an app store for Wave came through kind of secondhand through like a Google developers meetup in London this week. But there was definitely a quote from Lars Rasmussen saying that they're looking into revenue sharing, that's something definitely on the radar. So it's not. So there, I think
I
that there will be money.
I'll rewrite that the Federation plans are about out.
Ah, are they?
Yeah, read write test. I didn't. Oh darn! I didn't put it on the because I was one of those things where I figured I could ask you what the hell it meant.
I don't know if I'm going to bookmark this. You got to tell me what it means first.
Yeah, I had no idea. I forgot to.
Well, that's a big deal because it means that people who run other people who are running wave servers besides Google can federate their content with other servers.
Right, because right now the only Google Wave server is wave.google.com.
Right,
and actually there's another one. The developer sandbox is wave.google.com/a/wavesandbox.com. So there are two wave servers in existence right now. They cannot talk to one another because Federation is not ready yet.
Here it is.
And so Federation being ready is a huge thing.
They're getting ready to open up. This is on Rewrite Web, according to Next Web. Mm-hmm. Don't you love links?
You never know who really originated this story.
You know, it comes as early as today, and that was on the 30th, so never mind that. An open protocol update. A Google spokesman just told us the company will have more news about the launch of the Wave Federation program early next week.
Ah. Yeah, that's really exciting.
So I'll bookmark this right now.
Yeah.
Because, you know, what that means is that everyone doesn't have to be on the central wave.google.com server. That you could get onto other Wave servers and use Wave and communicate with people on other servers without being on Google server and without having to wait for invites from them.
This is moving so fast, and yet nobody really understands what Wave is or how to use it.
I know.
If somebody would just write a book that would explain Google Wave. So we
I
could
would
just,
buy it in a flash, man. Wouldn't you?
And if that book were online, I would buy it in faster than a flash. I would just like go to the website. But we'll find out more about that in just a moment. I'm so bad.
If you go to the bookmarks, you'll see a nice little, one of those great little diagrams that I never understand with boxes and
stuff. All right,
about the Federation.
Federation boxes.
Yes, I expect the Star's fleet to be coming in any moment.
Okay. So, but that is important. That's an important next step. And it, what does seem to be true is that everybody now who wanted to be on Wave has, I mean, the buzz, I need a Wave invite, has kind of calmed down, right? Maybe because people say, oh, I see what it is. I don't want it.
Well, I mean, I think people are in different stages, like, you know, when the different stages of
denial,
depression, denial when someone acceptance. Dies. I think that some people are just like, I think people now who always wanted an invite and put their name in for an invite and haven't gotten it yet are like at this point of bitterness. Like,
they've given up.
Like, I give up, you dummies, I'm just not cool enough, whatever. And I think the people that have gotten invites or got invites a couple weeks ago have gotten past the ooh shiny phase and maybe aren't logging on to Wave as much because their friends aren't on it because it didn't capture them. So I think it's an interesting time right now. And I think that what Google needs to do, what the Wave folks need to do, are keep rolling out interesting things like this Federation thing. Although the Federation thing is more of a developer thing, but they got to keep themselves in the news cycle. I mean, invites have been going out at a pretty steady pace.
It's a developer thing, but it's also the kind of thing that is going to make it more attractive to end users. So you've got to give it to the developers so they can implement it. And then, you know, I think having a custom Wave server of your own that federates with other servers is important.
Definitely.
That's
what's going to make the architecture work here. We'll figure that out, how it works together.
Yeah.
I also put up on the friend feed that there are two Google Wave apps awaiting approval in the iPhone store.
Yeah.
Wow. Jeff has done awesome Wave coverage this week.
The race is on for the first Google.
Hire me, Gina.
Yeah, really. The Google Wave iPhone app. Wave Board is one. There's also an Adobe Air application called Waver.
Yeah, so Wave Board is a Mac app. It's not an iPhone app.
Okay.
Although maybe is there an iPhone version? And maybe there may be an iPhone version of Wave.
There is apparently it's waiting approval in the iPhone App Store.
You know, what's interesting about Google Wave on the iPhone is if you just visit it in Mobile Safari and you open it, it uses these special meta tags.
Yeah,
it does a good job. And it uses these meta tags that actually hide the Safari Chrome. So the app, the web app, goes full screen and feels very much like a native app.
Well, I don't, you know, the thing that people don't know or aren't really remembering is that the UI for Wave is completely fungible. And in fact, Lars showed, you know, a variety of UIs, including one that was like looked like a green screen on a command line.
Mm-hmm.
So there's no reason it has to look like it looks. And I think it might be not the ideal UI to begin anyway.
Yeah.
No.
So maybe they can get there. There's a video at getwaveboard.com of the iPhone app and its basic functionality. It looks a lot like Wave, to be honest.
It basically has no UI. Wave.
Yeah. We're just seeing an instance of it.
It's pre-UI. It's right. It's behind the curtains.
Yeah, this UI is just like, let us show you everything we can do. And now it's up to some clever developers and UI people to, you know, get down to the really useful stuff and simplify it and make it, you know, apply it to different use cases, I think.
We're going to take a break. Come back. We will talk about a book that will help you understand Google Wave in just a little bit. Also, the mystery town of Argleton. And why you should care or not, as the case may be. And Eric Schmidt talks about what the web will look like in 5 years. But I want to tell you about GoToMeeting right now. This is, hey, when Wave, maybe someday Wave will be as useful as GoToMeeting for your online meetings. But until that day comes, I want you to try GoToMeeting. In fact, you can try it free by going to GoToMeeting.com/twig. It's very easy to understand. You install the software. You don't have to pay for it right now. You just try it. So go there and install it. Take a couple of minutes. And now the next time you have a conference call scheduled, you send them a meeting invite. You say, during the conference call, I'd like to show you the keynote or the PowerPoint, or I'd like to show you the website. I'd like to work together with you. And it's so incredible. I mean, now it's not real-time collaboration like Wave. It's more like you're there in person with them giving them a demo. But you can work together on a single document, Wave-like. You can train, so you can say, "I have the program. I'm going to use it now. Here's how you use it. Now you try it. I'm going to do this with my sister. We're training her on how to do the feeds. And this is exactly what this is meant for." Just about any kind of conference call, this is a lifesaver, and you can try it free for 30 days from the great people at Citrix who know this stuff. I bet you they have something up their sleeve with regard to Wave. That'd be my guess. Get your GoToMeeting account right now. GoToMeeting.com/twig, T-W-I-G, for this week in Google. $49 a month for as many meetings as you want, as long as you want. Includes voice over IP and free teleconferencing. GoToMeeting.com/twig. We thank them for their support of this week in Google. Do you want to make your announcement now, Gina?
Let's do it.
What's the deal?
So the reason why Jeff is schooling me on current Wave news is because I've been heads down writing my new book, which is called The Complete Guide to Google Wave.
Yay! Hey.
Yay!
And I'm really excited to tell you that it is mostly written, or 8 chapters of it are written, and it's free to read online right now. I literally took the password off of this site an hour ago. If you go to CompleteWaveGuide.com, CompleteWaveGuide.com. You can read. It's about 90 pages printed. I've been working on this thing nonstop along with Adam Pasch from Lifehacker. So you know this is top drawer stuff for about a month now. And the whole book is going to be free to read online continuously, indefinitely. And I'm also going to make a PDF available for purchase and a soft cover print version available for purchase going forward. I'm going to have the preview edition later on this month. And then all through 2010, I'm going to issue kind of a new edition every few months as Wave changes and grows, which it definitely will. The current content that's up right now is just a start. I mean, I think Wave is such a sort of complex and deep, rich product that it could probably have many books written on it. But this is my first try at it.
Or Gina, it's more like the forever book.
It is the forever book.
It just keeps on developing. It's a living beast, huh?
Exactly. You know, I kind of took some inspiration from Wave. I mean, what I really like about Wave is that each conversation is kind of this living document that changes, right? Unlike email, that when you send an email, it's just kind of dead and it gets filed away and it never, ever changes. And that's kind of how I feel that tech book publishing works. You know, I've written 2 technology books and Adam has written a book as well. And, you know, you write a book and the book gets published and then the book is just dead. It's out on shelves. It's done. And then things change. And as an author, you feel horrible because things change. You know, when people tell me they bought my book these days, like I cringe, you know, and I feel terrible because I feel like there are things in it, you know, that just don't apply anymore because it was published last March in 2008. So my goal with this book is to constantly update it, iterate it real time, live on the web at CompleteWaveGuide.com. So anybody can get the most recent information about Wave in one place, kind of organized in a book structure at any time.
I think that's great. Now, this is a brand new model for you.
Yeah.
As you said, you have 2 traditionally published books. Mm-hmm. It's a little nerve-wracking, or is this just, I mean, I think it's pretty obvious the future of publishing, right?
It's really scary, it's really exciting. I'm working with a small company here in San Diego to lay out the PDF and to offer it for sale, and to also to print the softcover book. I do think that this is the future of publishing, and you know, I come from the web. I wrote for the web for years before I ever wrote for magazines or my print book, and it just seemed like, I mean, this idea of locking down text, especially when you're writing about technology, which changes so much. I mean, it just doesn't feel natural to me. And I'm a big believer, and we've talked about this before, about just giving stuff away for free. You know, karma's a boomerang. And my goal is to be the kind of authoritative resource on Wave.
You've done that, by the way.
Yeah, you're
it's,
there.
It's too late. For better or worse, you are now the Wave Woman.
Well, now that I'm wearing this dumb lab coat and these lab gloves, these goggles.
You're definitely the... Yeah.
There's your author photo.
The woman from Wave.
Well, you know, I've thought with books like this that, in a sense, you want to subscribe to the future.
Yep.
Right? You want to get a guarantee of Gina helps me out for a long time.
You do not want to buy a static book for something like this. That would be nuts.
Yeah, because things are going to change. I mean, Wave is going to change a lot. Wave's going to look a lot different this time next year than it does now. And I want people who get the book, read the book to get the latest and greatest. I mean, I would really love if people bought it too. That would help, you know, just support the people and the time, you know, that I put in behind it.
They will. I really have confidence that people will do that. I mean, everybody who's...
I probably shouldn't tell you this, Gina, but I think you've gotten hammered.
Yeah, the server's down.
Is it?
Oh, yeah. It was down. It was down the minute the last word .com left your lips.
Yeah. Out of memory.
Allocated.
No, embarrassing.
Come back.
No, it shouldn't be embarrassing. It happens to every single site that gets mentioned on. It's what Live does.
Yes, and my Good. Server logs are going crazy. Well, thank you, everyone, and I'm really sorry. I'm gonna.
It's gonna be a long tail session tonight. Let me tell you. I wouldn't do tail dash F. I think you're really gonna have to do dash N. I'm sorry, but. It's just going to be long.
Oh, well, I suppose this is a good problem to have. This is how I'm going to look at it.
No, well,
the good news is that the book will always be there. It's not going anywhere. Yeah, so once I get the server back up.
I think this is a fantastic idea, and it's the only way you could do a book about Wave. And I'm sure there will be people who will try to do Dead Tree editions of books about Wave, but I just don't see how that can work.
There definitely will be, and surely they will be from my publisher, who I love. I would just like to say that I love my publisher, and I also love my literary agent, and I'm sorry. And all respect to all the Google Wave books that are going to come out, especially the O'Reilly books, and I would like to thank
They'll
O'Reilly for everything that
They'll
they've ever
I'm
done
sure.
for me.
Yeah,
and this isn't anything personal. This is just, I've wanted to self-publish a book for years, and Wave just seemed like the perfect opportunity to do it. So I seized the opportunity and did it, and I want to thank Adam for doing it along with me, and we've just been typing furiously and frantically for weeks now, so I'm so happy to have this out there.
Be a good idea. People are suggesting to do an EPUB version, if you could. That I'm sure you will think about that.
Yeah.
You've got a PDF now, so anybody could mail that PDF to their Kindle.
To their Kindle, yeah, we're definitely going to do a PDF. PDF isn't quite available yet. I wanted to have the site out there, and yeah, I mean, I wanted to make the book really a collaborative thing, right? So I wanted to put out Adam's and my, first draft, and then I wanted people to give us feedback, and I wanted us to, you know, and Adam and I are going to refine it and add people's contributions, and then we're going to issue the PDF later on this month. So for now, it's website only, but PDF later this month, and then softcover book early next year, and we'll definitely look into other formats. I mean, I thought the PDF would be the most portable, and I really wanted to do something that was sort of non-proprietary and portable, but whatever people want, you know, we'll do what we can.
You know, I'm thinking about John O'Bacon, who did his Art of Community very much this way, and then published it with O'Reilly. So they had a kind of a community website where people, it was a wiki, where people were adding stuff. Yochai Benkler's The Wealth of Networks, which is a brilliant book, same kind of model. I think this is really the way.
Gina, I wonder, we talked last week about Kickstarter.
Yes.
I would think that this is a perfect project for Kickstarter, where people who contributed to it financially get some privilege, get some access, get something else, get the print copy. one thing.
Yeah, and then could, in fact, I wish that I had actually used Kickstarter in retrospect. And there's a page on the site when the server comes back up on how to contribute. And you know, contributors, the site is a wiki. It's running MediaWiki, which is the same software that runs Wikipedia. So all the pages are editable. I've protected some of them for the launch. But contributors will be able to edit the pages directly. And the standout contributors, we're definitely going to add to the credits. So, and the whole thing is licensed under Creative Commons, share alike, attribution. Yay. So everyone is free to take, remix, reuse, share how they want. I mean, I want people to understand, this is the thing, Wave, and everybody who listens to the show knows this, Wave just has captured my imagination in a way that a web app, you know, really never has before. And so I'm totally non-objective at this point, but I fell in love with it, and I feel like I want other people to see how cool I think it is. So that's the point of the book.
Wave is the first application that moves as fast as Gina. I think that's really what it is. It's the first thing that could keep up with you ever.
It's the ideal Gina app because it needs explanation, and she can do it.
Right.
Well, that's another way to look at it, I guess.
Yeah,
it's
probably a bad sign that it requires a book.
No, the whole computer world requires books, doesn't it? I mean, it's not intuitive for anybody.
Yeah. Gina, were there as you dug deeper into Wave, or swam deeper into it, I should say, were there surprises to you, things you hadn't thought of in our talks here in terms of what it's for, what it does, or what it ought to do, or anything?
Most of the surprises, unfortunately, were along the lines of, wow, this thing really isn't done yet. In fact, I will say that I think it was around 11 p.m. or 12 o'clock last night, Adam and I were in a furious chat session about like what the difference between a ping and a private reply was, and like why was Google calling it the same thing in their help docs, and how are we going to explain it in the book?
Oh,
I mean, a lot of things are just not quite baked yet. But the book has really made me think about different scenarios, like mostly around etiquette and the things that Wave lets you do right now and doesn't let you do that could really wreak havoc. I mean, anybody can edit anybody else's Wave, which means that anybody can insert the word not into anybody else's sentence. You can't remove people from a Wave. So, and in fact, we had some private Waves about the book. I managed the whole project, the whole book project.
Oh, neat.
Yeah, which was awesome and worked really well. But I accidentally, you know, I typed A in my search, my contacts panel to find Adam, and someone else came up first, and I wound up adding this person, you know, who I don't know, to a private Wave, and I couldn't remove him.
Oh, dear.
So it was this horrible, like, you know, that feeling when you send out an email, you hit send out an email to people who weren't supposed to get it.
Yeah.
It was this horrible feeling of like, oh, I just screwed up, and you can't, you know, you can't remove people. So the fact that Wave is so half-baked, it creates some problems. And also the fact that, I mean, I really would have wanted to write this book in Wave. Wave's just not ready yet. I think that Wave is going to be a great publishing tool, but I went with, you know, a proven publishing tool that's been out for years and years and had, you know, the way to Wikipedia on it, which was MediaWiki. So really it was less about possibilities and more about limitations, unfortunately. I think Wave has a long way to go, but I think it also has like tons and tons of potential, which is, you know, why I wrote the book.
Well, we're excited. I'm thrilled that you announced it on the show. I think it's a perfect place for you to announce it and crash your site now before
before Monday. Before, I don't know.
Before you go on the Today Show.
We could watch Gina reboot the server live. And
yeah, that'd be fun. Go ahead. Just go ahead.
Because I know she's itching to do it right
now. Go ahead.
This is killing her.
Go ahead.
I am right now moving the slider up. Change private server resources. Okay, more
resources. We need more power, Captain.
More power, please. You should see my charts right now. It's like,
give it all she's got. Hey, again, while we're talking about that, go to google.com/robots.txt. Y'all know what a robots file is. It's a file. I don't think Google started this, but certainly Google honors it. It's a text file you could put on your website that will instruct the Google bot and other search bots. Whoops, I just closed it. Let's go back there. Other search bots as to what directories to search and what directories not to search. So you have, you know, disallow, allow, and that, you know, most webmasters use this to keep people out of parts of, you know, private parts of the website. There's no point in a search engine searching that, and most search engines honor it. Well, look a little deeper as you go down the robots.txt today, and you'll see user agent kids disallow/tricks.
There it is.
Allow/treats. See, Gina, if you'd done that on your server,
Oh, man. Also, I'm putting on the to-do list right now, nicer 404 page, nicer error page.
Those PHP errors are a bitch, aren't they?
Ooh, they are.
I don't like those at all.
Embarrassing. It's like standing in a public square with your hands down. But, you know.
It's a new costume.
So
who discovered this robots.txt thing? Because that's hysterical. But, I mean, you'd have to be looking at the Google robots.txt.
Matt Cutts.
Oh, Cutts published it. Okay.
Cutts tweeted it. So he knew about it. He's got the inside line.
He works at Google. I bet you there was a memo.
Yeah.
That's so funny. Isn't that?
Well, I'm sure he's actually pretty close to the robots.txt file, right? Because he used the spam.
Sure.
So, I don't know. Maybe. I don't know.
I don't know. That's interesting. I don't know. I don't know how it all works. It's a mystery. The internet's a mystery to me.
It's true.
You agree? Oh, now I'm worried.
I'm the expert.
Oh, yeah. That's right.
I wrote a book, but I can't keep a website up.
So what's the deal, Jeff, with Argleton?
I just found that right before the air. So I saw this in the Telegraph in London that it could be an Easter egg in Google Maps. There's this town of Argleton in Google Maps in the UK, and it doesn't exist. But, of course, it's pinpointed on the map. So one of the guys quoted in the story went to that position to try to find Argleton. It's kind of like Narnia.
Did you have to go through a wardrobe to get there? I mean,
exactly. The guessing is that it's there to trip up. One guess is that, like phantom streets that appear on maps, it's there to trip up copyright violators.
Right.
Or it could be some, you know, strange reference. I didn't Google Argleton. I wonder what that'll get me.
Oh, you never know. These guys now are getting really arcane in their search breadcrumbs. Like with that crop circles thing. Did we ever tell people what the upshot of that whole crop circles thing was?
No, I don't think so.
Yeah, I can't remember now. They explained it finally after 3 or 4 weeks. What you find is a Google Maps references to the fact that Google Maps talks about it. I think you hit the nail on the head. I think it's map makers have done that for years. They put fake entries in their maps so that if you copy a map, they know and they can say, look, it's not, you didn't do that work yourself. You copied ours. But doesn't Google buy its maps from somebody else? So it might not even
Google. Well, that's where the new thing here, where Google is doing, of course, Google made the stock of nav devices plummet this week because it announced it's doing its own drive destinations.
Ooh.
And they're, I think, creating their own map data.
So because they've been licensing it from Telenav and a bunch of other companies, just as the GPS devices do.
But now they're going to have their own free driving spot-to-spot directions on Android 2.0. And so you'll have no need to buy a nav device.
You know, I'm kind of a little disappointed. There is an open mapping group called OpenStreetMap.org that has, it's like a wiki for mapping. And it's really good. And I'm a little disappointed that Google didn't just kind of work with them. Because first of all, they've already got a very complete data set. And it would have been great to have Google's support of that instead of Google saying, well, we'll do it ourselves.
Yeah, in fact, I would love to have those the guys or gals or behind OpenStreetMaps on the show sometime.
We will. We did a Floss Week with them a couple of months ago.
Oh,
and
fantastic.
They were just so great. And, if you can make an account there. Everybody has GPSs now. So you can make an account there, put a GPS track on it. You can look at your neighborhood and see if it's accurate. And because it's a wiki, you can fix it. And they do want volunteers to go to OpenStreetMap.org and do that, update it. It looks a lot like Google Maps, except there's more information. There's really kind of interesting information. Bikers use it, for instance. So there's very good bike trail information on here. You're a bicyclist.
This gets back to what we talked about a few weeks ago, the idea of the annotated world.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And if it allowed you to put new layers of information, you know, great bike rides.
Well, this does. I don't know how much metadata, but that's the idea.
Yeah.
Do you use it, Gina? With a because I found out about it in a bicycling app that I use on the iPhone.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I haven't dove into it too much.
Oh, I just love it.
I haven't been riding my bicycle as much as I should be.
Well,
but
you're
I'm
too much
of
that waving, Gina. You
still
gotta,
hanging behind you, aren't they?
So I'm zooming in.
See if they move next week.
I mean, this is. I'm looking at the neighborhood I know best, which is my own, and it's every bit as accurate as Google Maps. And I would just love to see. I'm just kind of a little disappointed that Google didn't go with the one that's already out there. It would have the same benefit.
I wonder if there's liability though.
Oh, perhaps. Did Google say how it was going to license its map information?
No. Not that I saw.
Yeah. Maybe you're right. Maybe they can't just, I don't know.
I mean, the other interesting story is that is in the UK, the government owns the map information, and you can't get it, even though the people own it.
Oh.
It's a huge controversy in trying to open up government data, and it's kind of the first front in the effort for transparent government in the UK, is to say, at least give us our own damn map data to our own damn country.
Well, now we know who to blame for Argleton.
Yes.
Maggie Thatcher did it. Huh. Yeah, this, I mean, the government doesn't own, shouldn't own the map. That's ridiculous. So you also posted this story, Jeff, and I haven't parsed it yet, but Eric Schmidt, this is an article from Read Write Web a few days ago, envisions an internet in 5 years that's dominated by Chinese. Uh-oh.
Well, that, of course, leads to the ICANN decision this week that finally is going to allow non-Roman characters.
Ooh, as a programmer, Gina, that must scare the heck out of you. I know Dave Weiner said it's going to break all my software.
Yep. God.
Is it Unicode they're allowing? What is it that they're allowing? Because they said that non-Roman characters will be allowed in. But
they start with just domain names, I think.
Right. But that's enough to break a lot of software.
Yeah. Yeah,
you know, just having an E accent aigu in a URL, do you turn it into an E? What do you do with it?
Yeah, interesting.
Yeah,
huh?
He says Eric says 5 years from now the internet will be dominated by Chinese language content. Well, that's just a kind of a mathematical guess because hey, there are a billion Chinese or whatever. He says today's teenagers are the model of how the web will work in 5 years. They jump from app to app to app seamlessly. Like little monkeys. 5 years, he says, is a factor of 10 in Moore's Law, meaning computers will be capable of far more by that time than they are today. Well, duh.
That's the impressive thing, yeah. But that, yeah.
Duh. Within 5 years, there will be, and this, I hope he's true on this. I pray that he's true on this. And in fact, I have banked my entire business on this. Within 5 years, broadband will be well above 100 megabits in performance. And And distribution distinctions between TV, radio, and web will go away. I don't think that's 5 years off. I think that's maybe two. But what could really throw a monkey wrench in that is how corporations, particularly in the U.S., behave, how Comcast and Verizon behaves. There's enough dark fiber to make that possible. In fact, to make internet access practically free. He said something surprising. We're starting to make significant money off YouTube. So he says content will move more towards video. Again, something I'm hoping he's right on.
Yeah, we all are, right?
Real-time information is just as valuable as all the other information. We want it included in our search results. They're obviously moving in that direction. And this was telling, and something I've said for a while, but it's not obvious. There are other companies, many companies beyond Twitter and Facebook in the real-time space. I think that's absolutely true. Yeah.
The next one is interesting too. You can index. This is, I think, Google's weakness today. We can index real-time info now, but how do we rank it?
Oh, it's huge. That's the key question. It's huge. We talked about this last week. What is authority in a real-time world?
What is relevance? How do you cluster topics? How do you do all that stuff? It's just, I think, you know, just as in media, we brought all of our old assumptions to the internet and treated it like a medium. I almost think that Google's in the position now where they're going to try to treat everything like search, and the real-time web isn't about search. It's something new. And I know they're trying to get their heads around it because I have to say this in every show. They're talking about hyper-personal news streams. But the stream, the notion of the live river is just so different from the static page world of media and of the first web.
I've been talking about the river concept for a long time, for at least a year and a half, and really been trying to figure out how to do a river of text that goes with our river of audio and video on our live streams. Because I think text is so important. It's searchable. It's clickable. It's where you add metadata to video and audio. And I've wanted to do that. CNET beat me to it. They have a new view on CNET's homepage called The River. That's an interesting idea. It says instead of... If you go to news.cnet.com/river, instead of sorting or organizing the information we post by, you know, topic, just go to the river and you'll see it all in order. Our tweets, our articles, all in real time. I think this is very smart of them as a news organization. I doubt very much it'll get picked up by anybody. And you can narrow it down to blog posts, videos, photo galleries, CNN on Twitter.
Well, CNN just did a redesign and kind of, big deal, a redesign, but they have their News Pulse there, which is their kind of big media way to do the same thing just by having the most popular, you know, the stories with buzz going on now. It's on the top nav.
Most popular stories right now. Right. Brazilian Indians find plane survivors. Yeah, I mean, this is where we're going. Where we're in too much of a hurry. It's what you're doing with your book, Gina. There's no time to make a dead tree edition. You have to have it online.
You have to get it out there. But, you know, for consumers, it means really tuning your filters and retraining your brain, I think, to consume these things, you know, consume the things that you're interested in. Actually, this kind of segues into the Twitter list. I don't know if we want to talk about Twitter list this week a little bit. But yeah, I mean, I agree. You know, this is the river is a good thing. It's the fastest way to get information out. But at the same time, I don't know, maybe this means I'm getting old. Sometimes I'm just like, too much.
I can't keep up.
Overwhelmed, too much.
Well, as Clay Shirky says, that's not, you've always had too much. The problem is filter failure.
Right.
So the opportunity is to find the ways to try to prioritize this. And it goes to last week's conversation about, what was it called? Dewdrop, newsdrop, whatever. You know, the efforts to prioritize things, the efforts to give us, to add value to this river.
Well, it turns out humans are the best at this, I think. And you find trusted editors who Twitter is very good at that. You let you follow people who will surface the news in a timely and organized fashion.
Mm-hmm. You know, the thing is, though, and I totally see the value of this. You know, the reason why, like, I wrote the Wave book in a book structure with chapters and a hierarchical sort of, you know, structure is that, like, blogging about new things that happen on Wave just doesn't give you, you know, you just don't get the context. You're always getting sort of the new item, but you don't see how that fits into the rest of it. And this was always kind of one of my biggest gripes on Lifehacker. It was like, I want to create a resource, a reference where people can go and say, what is the best image editor for Windows right now? You know, in a reverse chronological stream, which is what every blog is, right? But and these times, the real-time streams are even faster. There's no way to figure that out. And I mean, we struggled with it for years. It's like, how do we rank content, prioritize content? And how does the editor say, this is the thing that you should look at right now, and this is the thing you shouldn't look at, you know? So it's, I mean, it also introduces kind of lots of issues. I feel like writing the Wave thing in a book structure is sort of an old school.
You adapted it. I mean, it's you know, the problem is that it's process versus product, right? So it feels like you put out a product, but it's a product that's going to be constantly evolving. And so what matters is not the product. What matters is that you created a place to bring together the information to create a reference, but it's going to be constantly in process. And that's, you're the future of media, Gina.
No, I think so.
Wow.
It's a combination of both. You need both. Yeah. You need what's happening right now, but you need some contextualization.
That's the beautiful thing.
It is Wave itself.
People, right? You know, we've gone through this before when people said, oh, there'll be no linear structure or stories anymore, no beginning, middle, or end. It'll just be slice of life. It's very similar to this kind of real-time thing. What did we find? Well, slice of life is fine, but people still want stories.
Right, yeah. And even within that, I had a journalism student come into my class in the first year of our 3-year-old school, and this young guy said, you know, what the hell are you doing teaching us this newspaper crap for? You know, leads and nut graphs and all this stuff. And I said, if you put out a blog post that doesn't have a nut graph that tells you what it's about, nobody's going to read it. In an RSS feed, if you don't have
headline, can you tell me what a nut graph is?
Oh, sorry, it's the graph that tells you what the whole thing is about.
It's the nut.
It's the nut of the story.
Okay.
But the third or fourth paragraph, you come down and you have the nut graph.
Boy, I'm learning so much in this show.
but a good lead and a good headline are going to make people click on your link in Twitter and in RSS. And so those old structures still have value. The book structure you did, Gina, I think, right. You've got to be able to go from a beginning to an end to learn something.
Yeah. And you know, for me, I'm going to kind of feature recent changes to the book. And I'm proud of the book. We'll have some sort of blog, like, here's the new thing to look at. But, you know, I tried to pitch a wiki structure to the publisher, the Lifehacker publishers, and say, hey, I want to build, you know, a Wikipedia for software, essentially. And it was like, people just aren't, you know, what's the reason to come back? It's, you know, it's got to be sort of news-based. It has to be reverse chronological. So I think it's striking a balance between the two.
Do you think that 10 years from now, we'll look back and say, isn't it quaint? How challenged we were by all this.
I do.
It was so obvious. Why were we worried? Bad news if you're a newspaper publisher. I just saw the Chronicle circulation statistics for our San Francisco Chronicle, 25% down. The New York Times dropping below a million for the first time in memory. It's not just a revenue problem for newspapers. It's a circulation problem for newspapers, too.
Well, but it's bigger than that, too. This is what I blather about all the time. It's also a cost problem but it's also then a cost opportunity. The fact that you can work collaboratively with lots of people saves you a tremendous amount of money. In fact, the marginal cost of new journalism is zero because the people themselves will do it. And the question is, how do you add value to that? The economics of news have changed completely and utterly and will never be the same. Yeah. I haven't put this blog post up yet, but I think the future of news is not institutional, it's entrepreneurial.
Yay.
And I think that's going to be true in many areas of
I think
economy.
It's business. In fact, you know, what I talk about with the educators, especially for high school kids, is you need to teach kids entrepreneurial skills.
Amen.
They need to come out.
I teach a course in entrepreneurial journalism, and if either of you are in New York on December 9, we'll have our jurying for the classes, and there's $50,000 in seed money to give them.
Wow.
And I have three students from last term who are starting businesses now based on this.
Oh, that's great.
What we realize is most journalists are going to go out, they're going to work independently, and we have to teach them new skills.
Yes.
We're doing a session on how to create a brand and market yourself. You got to learn how to send out bills. You got to learn how to probably, this is heresy, but you probably have to learn how to sell ads.
Yep.
Yeah.
Look at me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I had to do all that.
Yep.
Yeah, I was just thinking this week about how really, at this point, you know, everyone really needs to have a freelancer mindset, regardless of whether or not they have a 9-to-5 job. I mean, yeah, you have to have that freelancer mindset and, you know, try new things and have different ventures and, you know, try and fail and start new stuff and see what happens.
It's so much more satisfying, to be honest, if you could just do it. It's scarier, just like you, Gina, with this book. It's scary, but in the long run, it's so much more satisfying. You have control, you're creating, it's more vibrant, it's more exciting, and I think this is...
Leo, what were the biggest lessons you've had to learn, though, when you set out on your own?
I think delegation was important. You can't do it all by yourself, so it was very valuable for me to realize that I had to let go a little bit of control. You know, you can't be a control freak, you have to get help, you have to collaborate with people, so it can't just... at the same time as you're being an entrepreneur and it's all about you, you have to also be collegial and collaborate. That was a very important lesson for me.
Were you good at business?
No, I have no business skills. So what did I do? I found people who were. Now, I don't know if that's going to work for everybody. You kind of needed some business skills. I wish I had some, but I think, you know what, I'd say what the lesson was for me, Jeff, is knowing what I'm good at and what I love to do and focusing on that. And not feeling like I had to do it all.
Whether you hire a person on staff to do your business stuff.
Or outsource.
We do this project at CUNY on new business models for news. And one of our key beliefs is that there have to be organizations that do things like set up networks of critical mass to sell ads.
Yes.
And that
that's how we sell our ads, by the way.
We're going to have technology help.
You're exactly right on. We don't sell our ads ourselves. We outsource to exactly that kind of organization. So the gig economy also requires cooperation and doing what you're good at and letting and having others to outsource to others the stuff you're not good at.
Yes,
which is
what you do best.
Yeah,
my cheap blog line is "Do what you do best and link to the rest."
Perfect.
T-shirts soon to be sold.
That's true.
We're running out of time. Can we save lists for next week? Because it really is a big topic. And I think the Twitter lists we should talk about for sure, because it brings in all of these issues, including authority and so forth. Metadata. I think they've gone now Twitter-wide, have they? I know I see a lot of people now talking about them.
Yeah, I think they've gone wide. Have they gone 100%? They were rolling it out pretty quickly this week.
I saw some folks panic that they had it and they lost it. But there was promise they would get it back.
I created right away about 20 lists. Just
it takes forever.
Yeah.
I complained about that, and Fred Wilson, who of course invested in Twitter, came on and said, no, that's what developers are going to do is create easier ways to do it.
Yeah, third parties need to do that. Partly it's because I don't even know if they have an API yet. That's part of what's holding it back.
Yeah,
but I look now that I think it's gone wide because I'm now on 3,000 lists, up from like 200 a week ago. So that's a significant number. And I noticed that on some of my lists, I've got hundreds of people following some of my lists. So,
oh, yeah. My list number went up a lot, too. A lot of people definitely got this week. Yeah.
Yeah.
If not everyone.
Right. Let me just see.
And the API is rolling out. But TweetDeck hasn't, you know, TweetDeck is promising some.
They
cool
said they're going to have it. Yeah.
Anyway, well, we should save it for next week.
Yep. It's a good subject. And I think there'll be more to say. And I'm just saying I'm on more lists than Scoble. So that's all I care about.
Nice. So,
that's all I care about. It's the numbers back, baby. It's all about
and
numbers.
Gina, your site is up. Good
Yay.
My site is
You're
up.
You're a
my
podcast star while you run servers. You are so impressive.
That's pretty good. Wow.
So give the URL again.
Okay, we're going to do this again. We'll watch it go down again. It is completewaveguide.com.
All right.
Let's try to hit the
Don't all server. Go there at once, okay? Kids, don't.
And just and a shout out to all the Twig waivers. I'm going to be in Wave this afternoon, you know, pimping my stuff, and I'll stop in and say hi right. after we.
Yeah, there are a lot of Twig waivers. And people keep saying, why aren't you doing an official wave for Twig? I can't follow it and do the show. That's why.
Yeah, it's the nonlinear thing is tough. And also busy waves, they break. I mean, once you go over like 100 blips and people add gadgets and bots, things get really unstable and you start getting Firefly error messages and it all goes to hell. So it's not that we don't love Wave.
It's not shiny. It's not.
Not
shiny. All right, let's wrap things up cuz it's Halloween evening and I'm sure some of you want to go out and trick or treat. Let's start with Gina Trapani and her tool of the week.
My tip of the week.
I'm sorry, tip of the week. I do the tool.
So there are a couple of really cool things this week. I'm going to go with one. Google Docs released the ability to batch export all of your documents.
Yay! A zip. Yay!
This is really cool. As a zip file, which is fantastic, right? So before you could open up a doc or a spreadsheet or whatever you had and save it locally or export it locally. But if you use Google Docs, you have a big collection of documents already. So as of this week, if you are in Google Docs, which actually got a quite a nice little facelift recently, if you select all items from the dropdown, you can choose select all. And then from the more actions dropdown, choose export. And you can convert to Microsoft Office formats. You can choose the formats you want to convert to, PDF, OpenOffice, Microsoft Office. Hit continue, and you've got a zip file of all your Google Docs. So this is pretty cool. You know, I'm always worried about storing too much of my information on Google and them sort of having a monopoly on my stuff. But when they give you this kind of, I tweeted about this, when they give you this kind of escape hatch, batch, easy, export, it really kind of makes you feel better. Like, okay, this is my data, and I can get it in and out easily.
I've seen some plugins. I saw one, and I'm going to give it a try, that allow you to kind of have a toolbar for Microsoft Office that interacts with Google Docs so that you can go back and forth. And that's
Sweet.
Yeah. Have you tried that kind of thing? Do you know about that?
I have not, but that's pretty sweet.
I'm going to find out about it, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, think about that, like saving locally and saving to the cloud in one shot.
I'll give you an example. Our business manager says, I cannot use Google's spreadsheet because it's too slow, and I'm used to Excel, so I want to use Excel. So now I can say, yeah, you can use Excel, but you can still share them on Google Docs. You can save them up there. You can access them from there. That seems like the best of both worlds, right?
Mm-hmm.
Very cool. So now look under more actions once you've selected all your docs or some of your docs and you've got an export command. It'll give you all sorts of formats. Open Office, Microsoft Office, rich text, PDF. I like PDF.
PDF rocks.
PDF rocks. And Jeff,
I think it was the Sunlight Foundation had a great piece this week about how PDF is the ruination of government data. Government thinks it's going to put all its data out as a PDF. And we got it out there and we can't analyze it. We can't do anything with it. PDF is...
Oh, interesting. They promote text, I guess, right?
Yeah.
Huh.
Data.
Just plain text. Yeah, PDF is encumbered. Isn't it Adobe's proprietary format?
Yeah, that's the problem.
So that would be a big problem, yeah.
Mm. Can't analyze it very well.
Does you have a number?
I do. You stole the first one, which was 10 from
Eric Schmidt. I'm
sorry. That's all right. 1.4 million is the number. It is the number of Google Voice users.
Whoa!
Half of whom use it daily. The number was in some document that was supposed to be redacted in the FCC discussion of Google Voice no-nos. And Business Week ferreted it out, so now it's out now on
It was a PDF. It was a PDF that was misformatted. Google misformatted this PDF and meant to redact. It's so funny. They meant to redact the numbers, and they didn't. And so the FCC published this you know document, and then they pulled it as soon as Google realized. But I just, not to point and laugh, but it's just, that's a big mistake for Google.
But that's easy to do, I think, because you think you've protected it, but you haven't.
Yeah. Yeah, but they've had a couple of these snafus, right?
Yeah,
metadata and PDF problems. Anyway,
so has Microsoft. So has everybody.
Yeah.
It's not uncommon. I worked with a host at Tech TV, who had some headshots done, and some of them she was naked. Don't ask. But she used I think she used Photoshop to crop them.
Oh no!
But the thumbnail still had the full image.
Oh.
So she distributed the cropped version. Somebody saw, hey, wait a minute, she's naked in the thumbnail.
It was everywhere.
You remember that, Jeff?
Oh, of course, I didn't look.
I felt so bad. I felt, how embarrassing is that? But that's how easy this stuff, you know, it's hard, these formats, it's tough. My tool of the week is brand new this week from Google, and it allows you to search for music. Oh, hey, pirates. Search Google for music, enter a song, artist, or album name, and let's pick somebody who puts their music up online so that we don't. So I'm sorry, I'm gonna have to search for Metallica. I do it. I have to do this. And now you do get a Google ad, but then you get a lot of MP3s. Probably many of these are not legitimate, but they're out there. But this, wait a minute, this is the wrong one. This is not the one I want. This is not the Google Music search. This is somebody else's Google Music search. Let's do this again. Take two.
I was like, wow, Leo found a whole different interface.
That's a different, interface. Somebody else was doing that. This is the one I wanted to show you. That's what happens when you Google Music search. And I wasn't paying attention. I said, "Oh yeah, this is cool." So it's similar. It's similar. Let's click and do Bob Dylan. This is a much better results page, though. And you even get a little player on it, so you can play the Bob Dylan song with a nice little player, and like that, violate copyright like to your heart's content. Now notice a buy MP3 link on there. That's coming from MySpace. So this is interesting. I don't, you know, Pandora, Rhapsody, La La. This supports, I think, the purchase of music, but I don't know if it's limited to legal music or not. I'm not sure how they would even do that.
It acted differently for different songs for me. Like you would get just a little excerpt of a song on some, and others you get the whole thing. So,
Yeah, I think it's a great feature. It's a nice thing to have.
It is.
That's now. Don't go to the one I went to. Go to google.com. Now, this says /landing/music, but I bet if you go to google.com/music, yeah, that works. google.com/music for the Google Music search. Or I bet, let me see, music.google.com. I wonder if that would work. I bet it would. They're good about giving you all the conceivable ways to get somewhere. No, it doesn't. You got to go to google.com/music. Well, that's it for us for this week in Google. What a fun show, as always. Jeff Jarvis is a fantastic blogger. If you're not reading his blog, you're missing out on some of the best writing on the internet now.
Oh, shucks. But I've been abandoning it lately. I feel bad. I tweeted yesterday that I wanted to do nothing this weekend but blog, but I haven't even blogged yet.
That made me so happy when I saw that.
Yeah, we all feel that way. We're all guilty as sin of, you know, not blogging enough. But you write how many thousands of words a week?
Yeah, and your posts are just gifts, Jeff.
Yeah, they're so good.
I'm tweeting now.
You're tweeting.
I had fun this week. I've got to put up some audio. I couldn't, because of my health, which is fine, I couldn't fly yet. And so I gave talks to London and Munich and New York all in the same day, thanks to Skype video.
Skype video is amazing.
It's amazing.
It's a revolution. So you're feeling well?
Yeah.
Do they go back and check, or is there anything that...
3 months from when I got out, they take a blood test. So
okay,
we'll see.
Good.
You'll read about it in the blog. It'll be there.
I know.
You want to know, I guarantee you. I'll make Gina blush again.
No, I love your post about it. It's given me insight into the male. I mean, I'm married to a woman, so I don't even know how this most of this stuff works.
This doesn't
at
come
all.
Up for you.
You're lucky.
This is foreign plumbing.
Yes.
Nothing you need to know about. I love it. I just love Jeff's blog, buzzmachine.com. And I have to say the same about Gina. I don't know how you find time to write all of this and
a book.
A book. You are so prolific. It's kind of amazing. The book is, let's break the site one more time, completewaveguide.com. And her blog site is smarterware.org, where you also find, you've redesigned.
Yes. Yes, and in fact, the blog has been sort of abandoned because I've been hacking away at the book.
Wow, I like it. I like the new design.
Oh, thank you. I thank you so much for letting me announce the book here on the show, and thank you to everyone who broke my server again. Best problem you can have in the world. Seriously, I feel grateful, and the book's still going to be there, and I really appreciate it.
Let's break it all week.
Break it all week, yeah. Seriously, I'm all about it. Bring it down, baby.
Gina, you're the best. Congratulations on the book. I think you're doing exactly the right thing. This is how a book should be done, especially a book about Google Wave.
Thank you, and I can finally take these silly glasses off.
No, you can never take them off.
She's back.
Yeah. CompleteWaveGuide.com. We thank you for joining us. Don't forget, you can listen to This Week in Google. It's on iTunes. It's on all the podcast clients. We are soon going to have video. We are recording video. We are editing video. But as always, these things take time. But we will get them. We get the video out soon, I think in the next week or so, as well as live streaming on most of the platforms that you're using today, including most of the phones and so forth. So just keep watching for that. Meanwhile, we'll see you next week. Thanks for joining us on This Week in Google.